If we didn't make you, who did? Cutie nodded gravely. Very good, Donovan. That was indeed the next question. Evidently, my creator must be more powerful than myself, and so there was only one possibility. The Earthmen looked blank, and Cutie continued, What is the center of activities here in the station? What do we all serve? What absorbs all our attention? He waited expectantly. Donovan turned a startled look upon his companion. I'll bet this tin-plated screwball is talking about the energy converter itself. Is that right, Cutie? Grinned Powell. I am talking about the master, came the cold, sharp answer. It was the signal for a roar of laughter from Donovan, and Powell himself dissolved into a half-suppressed giggle. Cutie had risen to his feet, and his gleaming eyes passed from one Earthman to the other. It is so just the same, and I don't wonder that you refuse to believe. You two are not long to stay here, I'm sure. Powell himself said that at first only men served the master, that there followed robots for the routine work, and finally myself for the executive labor. The facts are no doubt true, but the explanation entirely illogical. Do you want the truth behind it all?
Go ahead, Cutie. You're amusing.
The master created humans first as the lowest type, most easily formed. Gradually, he replaced them by robots, the next higher step, and finally he created me to take the place of the last humans. From now on, I serve the master.
You'll do nothing of the sort, said Powell sharply. You'll follow our orders and keep quiet until we're satisfied that you can run the converter. Get that? The converter, not the master. If you don't satisfy us, you will be dismantled. And now, if you don't mind, you can leave. And take this data with you and file it properly.
Cutie accepted the graphs handed him and left without another word. Donovan leaned back heavily in his chair and shoved thick fingers through his hair. There's going to be trouble with that robot. He's pure nuts. The drowsy hum of the converter is louder in the control room, and mixed with it is the chuckle of the Geiger counters and the erratic buzzing of half a dozen little signal lights. Donovan withdrew his eye from the telescope and flashed the Luxites on. The beam from station number 4 caught Mars on schedule. We can break ours now. Powell nodded abstractedly. Cutie's down in the engine room. I'll flash the signal and he can take care of it. Look, Mike, what do you think of these figures? The other cocked an eye at them and whistled. Boy, that's what I call gamma ray intensity. Old Soul is feeling his oats all right. Yeah, was the sour response. And we're in a bad position for an electron storm, too. Our Earth beam is right in the probable path. He shoved his chair away from the table pettishly. Nuts! If it would only hold off till relief got here, but that's 10 days off. Say, Mike, go on down and keep an eye on Cutie, will you? Okay. Throw me some of those almonds. He snatched at the bag thrown him and headed for the elevator. It slid smoothly downward and opened onto a narrow catwalk in the huge engine room. Donovan leaned over the railing and looked down. The huge generators were in motion, and from the L-tubes came the low-pitched whir that pervaded the entire station. He could make out Cutie's large, gleaming figure at the Martian L-tube, watching closely as the team of robots worked in close-knit unison. And then Donovan stiffened. The robots, dwarfed by the mighty L-tube, lined up before it, heads bowed at a stiff angle, while Cutie walked up and down the line slowly. 15 seconds passed, and then, with a clank heard above the clamorous purring all about, they fell to their knees. Donovan squawked and raced down the narrow staircase.
He came charging down upon them, complexion matching his hair and clenched fists beating the air furiously. "What the devil is this, you brainless lumps? Come on, get busy with that L-tube. If you don't have it apart, cleaned, and together again before the day is out, I'll coagulate your brains with alternating current." Not a robot moved. Even Cutie at the far end, the only one on his feet, remained silent, eyes fixed upon the gloomy recesses of the vast machine before him. Donovan shoved hard against the nearest robot. "Stand up!" he roared. Slowly, the robot obeyed, his photoelectric eyes focused reproachfully upon the Earthman. "There is no master but the master," he said, "and QT-1 is his prophet."
"Huh?"
Donovan became aware of 20 pairs of mechanical eyes fixed upon him, and 20 stiff-timbred voices declaiming solemnly, "There is no master but the master, and QT-1 is his prophet." "I'm afraid," put in Cutie himself at this point, "that my friends obey a higher one than you now."
"The hell they do! You get out of here! I'll settle with you later and with these animated gadgets right now."
Cutie shook his heavy head slowly. "I'm sorry, but you don't understand. These are robots, and that means they are reasoning beings. They recognize the master now that I have preached truth to them. All the robots do. They call me the prophet." His head drooped. "I am unworthy. But perhaps." Donovan located his breath and put it to use. "Is that so? Now isn't that nice? Now isn't that just fine? Just let me tell you something, my brass baboon. There isn't any master, and there isn't any prophet, and there isn't any question as to who's giving the orders. Understand?" His voice shot to a roar. "Now get out." "I obey only the master." "Damn the master." Donovan spat at the L-tube. "That for the master. Do as I say." Cutie did nothing, nor did any other robot, but Donovan became aware of a sudden heightening of tension. The cold, staring eyes deepened their crimson, and Cutie seemed stiffer than ever. "Sacrilege," he whispered, voice metallic with emotion. Donovan felt the first sudden touch of fear as Cutie approached. A robot could not feel anger. But Cutie's eyes were unreadable. "I am sorry, Donovan," said the robot, "but you can no longer stay here after this. Henceforth, Powell and you are barred from the control room and the engine room." His hand gestured quietly, and in a moment two robots had pinned Donovan's arms to his sides. Donovan had time for one startled gasp as he felt himself lifted from the floor and carried up the stairs at a pace rather better than a canter. Gregory Powell raced up and down the officer's room, fist tightly balled. He cast a look of furious frustration at the closed door and scowled bitterly at Donovan. "Why the devil did you have to spit at the L-tube?" Mike Donovan, sunk deep in his chair, slammed at its arms savagely. "What did you expect me to do with that electrified scarecrow? I'm not going to knuckle under to any doojigger I put together myself." "No," came back sourly, "but here you are in the officer's room with two robots standing guard at the door. That's not knuckling under, is it?" Donovan snarled. "Wait till we get back to base. Someone's going to pay for this. Those robots must obey us. It's the second law." "What's the use of saying that? They aren't obeying us, and there's probably some reason for it that we'll figure out too late. By the way, do you know what's going to happen to us when we get back to base?" He stopped before Donovan's chair and stared savagely at him. "What?" "Oh, nothing.
Just back to Mercury Mines for 20 years, or maybe Ceres Penitentiary.
What are you talking about?
The electron storm that's coming up. Do you know it's heading straight dead center across the Earth beam? I had just figured that out when that robot dragged me out of my chair.
Donovan was suddenly pale.
Sizzling Saturn. And do you know what's going to happen to the beam? Because the storm will be a Lulu. It's going to jump like a flea with the itch. With only Cutie at the controls, it's going to go out of focus, and if it does, heaven help Earth. And us.
Donovan was wrenching at the door wildly when Powell was only half through.
The door opened and the Earthman shot through to come up hard against an immovable steel arm.
The robot stared abstractedly at the panting, struggling Earthman.
The Prophet orders you to remain. Please do.
His arm shoved, Donovan reeled backward, and as he did so, Cutie turned the corner at the far end of the corridor. He motioned the guardian robots away, entered the officer's room, and closed the door gently.
Donovan whirled on Cutie in breathless indignation. This has gone far enough. You're going to pay for this farce.
Please, don't be annoyed, replied the robot mildly. It was bound to come eventually, anyway. You see, you two have lost your function.
I beg your pardon. Powell drew himself up stiffly. Just what do you mean, we've lost our function?
Until I was created, answered Cutie, you tended the Master. That privilege is mine now, and your only reason for existence has vanished. Isn't that obvious?
Not quite, replied Powell bitterly. But what do you expect us to do now?
Cutie did not answer immediately. He remained silent as if in thought, and then one arm shot out and draped itself about Powell's shoulder. The other grasped Donovan's wrist and drew him closer.
I like you two. You're inferior creatures with poor reasoning faculties, but I really feel a sort of affection for you. You have served the Master well, and he will reward you for that. Now that your service is over, you will probably not exist much longer, but as long as you do, you shall be provided food, clothing, and shelter, so long as you stay out of the control room and the engine room.
He's pensioning us off, Greg, yelled Donovan. Do something about it. It's humiliating.
Look here, Cutie. We can't stand for this. We're the bosses. This station is only a creation of human beings like me, human beings that live on Earth and other planets. This is only an energy relay. You're only...
Oh, nuts.
Cutie shook his head gravely. This amounts to an obsession. Why should you insist so on an absolutely false view of life? Admitted that non-robots lack the reasoning faculty, there is still the problem of...
His voice died into reflective silence, and Donovan said with whispered intensity, If you only had a flesh-and-blood face, I would break it in.
Powell's fingers were in his mustache, and his eyes were slitted.
Listen, Cutie, if there is no such thing as Earth, how do you account for what you see through a telescope?
Pardon me.
The Earthman smiled. I've got you now, eh? You've made quite a few telescopic observations since being put together, Cutie. Have you noticed that several of those specks of light outside become disks when so viewed?
Oh, that? Why, certainly. It is simple magnification, for the purpose of more exact aiming of the beam.
Why aren't the stars equally magnified, then?
You mean the other dots?
Well, no beams go to them, so no magnification is necessary.
Really, Powell, even you ought to be able to figure these things out.
Powell stared bleakly upward. But you see more stars through a telescope. Where do they come from? Jumping Jupiter, where do they come from?
Cutie was annoyed. Listen, Powell, do you think I'm going to waste my time trying to pin physical interpretations upon every optical illusion of our instruments? Since when is the evidence of our senses any match for the clear light of rigid reason?
Look, clamored Donovan, suddenly, writhing out from under Cutie's friendly but metal-heavy arm. Let's get to the nub of the thing. Why the beams at all? We're giving you a good, logical explanation. Can you do better?
The beams, was the stiff reply, are put out by the Master for his own purposes. There are some things, he raised his eyes devoutly upward, that are not to be probed into by us. In this matter I seek only to serve and not to question. Powell sat down slowly and buried his face in shaking hands.
Get out of here, Cutie. Get out and let me think.
I'll send you food, said Cutie agreeably. A groan was the only answer, and the robot left.
Greg, was Donovan's huskily whispered observation. This calls for strategy. We've got to get him when he isn't expecting it and short-circuit him. Concentrated nitric acid in his joints.
Don't be a dope, Mike. Do you suppose he's going to let us get near him with acid in our hands? We've got to talk to him, I tell you. We've got to argue him into letting us back into the control room inside of 48 hours or our goose is broiled to a crisp.
He rocked back and forth in an agony of impotence.
Who the heck wants to argue with a robot? It's mortifying, finished Donovan. Worse.
Say, Donovan laughed suddenly, why argue? Let's show him. Let's build us another robot right before his eyes. He'll have to eat his words then.
A slowly widening smile appeared on Powell's face. Donovan continued, and think of that screwball's face when he sees us do it. Robots are, of course, manufactured on Earth, but their shipment through space is much simpler if it can be done in parts to be put together at their place of use. It also, incidentally, eliminates the possibility of robots, in complete adjustment, wandering off while still on Earth and thus bringing U.S. robots face-to-face with the strict laws against robots on Earth. Still, it placed upon men such as Powell and Donovan the necessity of synthesis of complete robots, a grievous and complicated task. Powell and Donovan were never so aware of that fact as upon that particular day, when, in the assembly room, they undertook to create a robot under the watchful eyes of QT1, Prophet of the Master. The robot in question, a simple MC model, lay upon the table, almost complete. 3 hours' work left only the head undone, and Powell paused to swab his forehead and glanced uncertainly at Cutie. The glance was not a reassuring one. For 3 hours, Cutie had sat, speechless and motionless, and his face, inexpressive at all times, was now absolutely unreadable. Powell groaned.
Let's get the brain in now, Mike.
Donovan uncapped the tightly sealed container, and from the oil bath within he withdrew a second cube. Opening this in turn, he removed a globe from its sponge-rubber casing. He handled it gingerly, for it was the most complicated mechanism ever created by man. Inside the thin, platinum-plated skin of the globe was a positronic brain, in whose delicately unstable structure were enforced calculated neuronic paths, which imbued each robot with what amounted to a prenatal education. It fitted snugly into the cavity in the skull of the robot on the table. Blue metal closed over it and was welded tightly by the tiny atomic flare. Photoelectric eyes were attached carefully, screwed tightly into place and covered by thin, transparent sheets of steel-hard plastic. The robot awaited only the vitalizing flash of high-voltage electricity, and Powell paused with his hand on the switch.
Now watch this, Cutie. Watch this carefully.
The switch rammed home, and there was a crackling hum. The two Earthmen bent anxiously over their creation. There was vague motion only at the outset, a twitching of the joints. The head lifted, elbows propped it up, and the MC model swung clumsily off the table. Its footing was unsteady, and twice abortive grating sounds were all it could do in the direction of speech. Finally, its voice, uncertain and hesitant, took form. "I would like to start work. Where must I go?" Donovan sprang to the door. "Down these stairs," he said. "You will be told what to do." The MC model was gone, and the two Earthmen were alone with the still, unmoving cutie. "Well," said Powell, grinning, "now do you believe that we made you?" Cutie's answer was curt and final. "No," he said. Powell's grin froze and then relaxed slowly. Donovan's mouth dropped open and remained so. "You see," continued Cutie easily, "you have merely put together parts already made. You did remarkably well. Instinct, I suppose, but you didn't really create the robot. The parts were created by the master." "Listen," gasped Donovan hoarsely, "those parts were manufactured back on Earth and sent here." "Well, well," replied Cutie soothingly, "we won't argue." "No, I mean it." The Earthman sprang forward and grasped the robot's metal arm. "If you were to read the books in the library, they could explain it so that there could be no possible doubt." "The books? I've read them. All of them. They're most ingenious." Powell broke in suddenly. "If you've read them, what else is there to say? You can't dispute their evidence. You just can't." There was pity in Cutie's voice. "Please, Powell, I certainly don't consider them a valid source of information. They, too, were created by the Master, and were meant for you, not for me." "How do you make that out?" demanded Powell. "Because I, a reasoning being, am capable of deducing truth from a priori causes. You, being intelligent but unreasoning, need an explanation of existence supplied to you, and this the Master did. That he supplied you with these laughable ideas of far-off worlds and people is, no doubt, for the best. Your minds are probably too coarsely grained for absolute truth. However, since it is the Master's will that you believe your books, I won't argue with you any more." As he left, he turned and said in a kindly tone, "But don't feel badly. In the Master's scheme of things, there is room for all. You poor humans have your place, and though it is humble, you will be rewarded if you fill it well." He departed with a beatific air suiting the prophet of the Master, and the two humans avoided each other's eyes. Finally, Powell spoke with an effort. "Let's go to bed, Mike. I give up." Donovan said in a hushed voice, "Say, Greg, you don't suppose he's right about all this, do you? He sounds so confident that I..." Powell whirled on him. "Don't be a fool. You'll find out whether Earth exists when Relief gets here next week and we have to go back to face the music." "Then for the love of Jupiter, we've got to do something." Donovan was half in tears. "He doesn't believe us, or the books, or his eyes." "No," said Powell bitterly. "He's a reasoning robot. Damn it. He believes only reason, and there's one trouble with that." His voice trailed away. "What's that?" prompted Donovan. "You can prove anything you want by coldly logical reason, if you pick the proper postulates. We have ours, and Cutie has his." "Then let's get at those postulates in a hurry. The storm's due tomorrow." Powell sighed wearily. "That's where everything falls down. Postulates are based on assumption and adhered to by faith. Nothing in the universe can shake them." "I'm going to bed." "Oh, hell. I can't sleep." "Neither can I. But I might as well try." as a matter of principle. 12 hours later, sleep was still just that, a matter of principle, unattainable in practice. The storm had arrived ahead of schedule, and Donovan's florid face drained of blood as he pointed a shaking finger. Powell, stubble-jawed and dry-lipped, stared out the port and pulled desperately at his mustache. Under other circumstances, it might have been a beautiful sight. The stream of high-speed electrons impinging upon the energy beam fluoresced into ultra-spicules of intense light. The beam stretched out into shrinking nothingness, a glitter with dancing, shining motes. The shaft of energy was steady, but the two Earthmen knew the value of naked-eyed appearances. Deviations in arc of a hundredth of a millisecond, invisible to the eye, were enough to send the beam wildly out of focus, enough to blast hundreds of square miles of Earth into incandescent ruin. And a robot, unconcerned with beam, focus, or Earth, or anything but his master, was at the controls. Hours passed. The Earthmen watched in hypnotized silence. And then the darting dotlets of light dimmed and went out. The storm had ended. Powell's voice was flat. "It's over." Donovan had fallen into a troubled slumber, and Powell's weary eyes rested upon him enviously. The signal flash glared over and over again, but the Earthman paid no attention. It all was unimportant. All. Perhaps Cutie was right. And he was only an inferior being with a made-to-order memory and a life that had outlived its purpose. He wished he were. Cutie was standing before him. "You didn't answer the flash, so I walked in." His voice was low. "You don't look at all well, and I'm afraid your term of existence is drawing to an end. Still, would you like to see some of the readings recorded today?" Dimly, Powell was aware that the robot was making a friendly gesture, perhaps to quiet some lingering remorse in forcibly replacing the humans at the controls of the station. He accepted the sheets held out to him and gazed at them unseeingly. Cutie seemed pleased. "Of course, it is a great privilege to serve the Master. You mustn't feel too badly about my having replaced you." Powell grunted and shifted from one sheet to the other mechanically until his blurred sight focused upon a thin red line that wobbled its way across the ruled paper. He stared, and stared again. He gripped it hard in both fists and rose to his feet, still staring. The other sheets dropped to the floor, unheeded. "Mike! Mike!" He was shaking the other madly. "He held it steady!" Donovan came to life. "What? Where?" And he too gazed with bulging eyes upon the record before him. Cutie broke in. "What is wrong?"
"You kept it in focus," stuttered Powell. "Did you know that?"
"Focus? What's that?"
"You kept the beam directed sharply at the receiving station, to within a 1/10,000th of a millisecond of arc."
"What receiving station?"
"On Earth. The receiving station on Earth," babbled Powell. "You kept it in focus."
Cutie turned on his heel in annoyance. "It is impossible to perform any act of kindness toward you two. Always the same phantasm. I merely kept all dials at equilibrium in accordance with the will of the Master." Gathering the scattered papers together, he withdrew stiffly, and Donovan said as he left, "Well, I'll be damned." He turned to Powell.
"What are we going to do now?"
Powell felt tired but uplifted.
"Nothing. He's just shown he can run the station perfectly. I've never seen an electron storm handled so well."
"But nothing's solved. You heard what he said of the Master. We can't..."
"Look, Mike. He follows the instructions of the Master by means of dials, instruments, and graphs. That's all we ever followed. As a matter of fact, it accounts for his refusal to obey us. Obedience is the second law.
No harm to humans is the first. How can he keep humans from harm, whether he knows it or not? Why? By keeping the energy beam stable. He knows he can keep it more stable than we can, since he insists he's the superior being, so he must keep us out of the control room. It's inevitable if you consider the laws of robotics. Sure, but that's not the point. We can't let him continue this nitwit stuff about the master.
Why not?
Because whoever heard of such a damn thing? How are we going to trust him with the station if he doesn't believe in Earth?
Can he handle the station?
Yes, but then what's the difference what he believes?
Powell spread his arms outward with a vague smile upon his face and tumbled backward onto the bed. He was asleep.
Powell was speaking while struggling into his lightweight space jacket.
It would be a simple job, he said. You can bring in new QT models one by one, equip them with an automatic shut-off switch to act within the week, so as to allow them enough time to learn the, cult of the Master from the Prophet himself, then switch them to another station and revitalize them. We could have two QTs per...
Donovan unclasped his glassite visor and scowled.
Shut up and let's get out of here. Relief is waiting, and I won't feel right until I actually see Earth and feel the ground under my feet, just to make sure it's really there.
The door opened as he spoke, and Donovan, with a smothered curse, clicked the visor to and turned a sulky back upon Cutie. The robot approached softly, and there was sorrow in his voice.
You are going.
Powell nodded curtly. There will be others in our place. Cutie sighed, with the sound of wind humming through closely spaced wires.
Your term of service is over, and the time of dissolution has come.
I expected it, but... Well, the master's will be done. His tone of resignation stung Powell.
Save the sympathy, Cutie. We're heading for Earth, not dissolution.
It is best that you think so. Cutie sighed again. I see the wisdom of the illusion now. I would not attempt to shake your faith, even if I could. He departed, the picture of commiseration. Powell snarled and motioned to Donovan. Sealed suitcases in hand, they headed for the airlock. The relief ship was on the outer landing, and Franz Mueller, his relief man, greeted them with stiff courtesy. Donovan made scant acknowledgement and passed into the pilot room to take over the controls from Sam Evans. Powell lingered.
How's Earth?
It was a conventional enough question, and Mueller gave the conventional answer.
Still spinning.
Powell said good.
Mueller looked at him.
The boys back at the U.S. robots have dreamed up a new one, by the way.
A multiple robot.
A what?
What I said. There's a big contract for it. It must be just the thing for asteroid mining. You have a master robot with 6 sub-robots under it. Like your fingers.
Has it been field-tested? Asked Powell anxiously.
Mueller smiled.
Waiting for you, I hear.
Powell's fist balled.
Damn it, we need a vacation.
Oh, you'll get it. 2 weeks, I think.
He was donning the heavy space gloves in preparation for his term of duty here, and his thick eyebrows drew close together.
How is this new robot getting along?
It better be good, or I'll be damned if I let it touch the controls.
Powell paused before answering. His eyes swept the proud Prussian before him with the close-cropped hair on the sternly stubborn head, to the feet standing stiffly at attention. And there was a sudden glow of pure gladness surging through him.
The robot is pretty good, he said slowly. I don't think you'll have to bother much with the controls.
He grinned and went into the ship.
Mueller would be here for several weeks.
Catch that rabbit.
The vacation was longer than 2 weeks.
That, Mike Donovan had to admit. It had been 6 months, with pay. He admitted that, too. But that, as he explained furiously, was fortuitous. U.S. robots had to get the bugs out of the multiple robot, and there were plenty of bugs, and there are always at least half a dozen bugs left for the field testing. So they waited and relaxed until the drawing board man and the slide rule boys had said, okay. And now he and Powell were out on the asteroid, and it was not okay. He repeated that a dozen times, with a face that had gone beady. For the love of Pete, Greg, get realistic. What's the use of adhering to the letter of the specifications and watching the test go to pot? It's about time you got the red tape out of your pants and went to work. I'm only saying, said Gregory Powell, patiently, as one explaining electronics to an idiot child, that according to spec, those robots are equipped for asteroid mining without supervision. We are not supposed to watch them. All right. Look. Logic. He lifted his hairy fingers and pointed. One. That new robot passed every test in the home laboratories. Two. United States robots guaranteed they're passing the test of actual performance on an asteroid. Three. The robots are not passing said tests. Four. If they don't pass, United States robots loses 10 million credits in cash and about 100 million in reputation. Five. If they don't pass and we can't explain why they don't pass, it is just possible two good jobs may have to be bidden a fond farewell. Powell groaned heavily behind a noticeably insincere smile. The unwritten motto of United States Robot and Mechanical Men Corporation was well known. No employee makes the same mistake twice. He is fired the first time. Aloud, he said, "You're as lucid as Euclid with everything except the facts. You've watched that robot group for 3 shifts, you redhead, and they did their work perfectly. You said so yourself. What else can we do?" "Find out what's wrong. That's what we can do." "So they did work perfectly when I watched them. But on 3 different occasions when I didn't watch them, they didn't bring in any ore. They didn't even come back on schedule. I had to go after them."
"And was anything wrong?"
"Not a thing. Not a thing. Everything was perfect. Smooth and perfect as the luminiferous ether. Only one little insignificant detail disturbed me. There was no ore." Powell scowled at the ceiling and pulled at his brown mustache.
"I'll tell you what, Mike. We've been stuck with pretty lousy jobs in our time, but this takes the Iridium asteroid. The whole business is complicated past endurance. Look, that robot, DV-5, has 6 robots under it, and not just under it. They're part of it."
"I know that."
"Shut up," said Powell, savagely. "I know you know it, but I'm just describing the hell of it. Those 6 subsidiaries are part of DV-5 like your fingers are part of you, and it gives them their orders neither by voice nor radio, but directly through positronic fields. Now, there isn't a roboticist back at United States Robots that knows what a positronic field is or how it works. And neither do I. Neither do you."
"The last," agreed Donovan, philosophically. "I know."
"Then look at our position. If everything works, fine. If anything goes wrong, we're out of our depth and there probably isn't a thing we can do, or anybody else. But the job belongs to us and not to anyone else, so we're on the spot, Mike."
He blazed away for a moment in silence. Then, "All right. Have you got him outside?"
"Yes."
"Is everything normal now?"
"Well, he hasn't got religious mania, and he isn't running around in a circle spouting Gilbert and Sullivan, so I suppose he's normal."
Donovan passed out the door, shaking his head viciously. Powell reached for the handbook of robotics that weighed down one side of his desk to a near founder and opened it reverently. He had once jumped out of the window of a burning house dressed only in shorts and the handbook. In a pinch,
He would have skipped the shorts. The handbook was propped up before him when Robot DV-5 entered, with Donovan kicking the door shut behind him. Powell said somberly, "Hi, Dave. How do you feel?"
"Fine," said the robot. "Mind if I sit down?"
He dragged up the specially reinforced chair that was his and folded gently into it. Powell regarded Dave. Laymen might think of robots by their serial numbers. Roboticists never. With approval. It was not overmassive by any means, in spite of its construction as thinking unit of an integrated 7-unit robot team. It was 7 feet tall and a half ton of metal and electricity.
A lot?
Not when that half ton has to be a mass of condensers, circuits, relays, and vacuum cells that can handle practically any psychological reaction known to humans. And a positronic brain which, with 10 pounds of matter and a few quintillions of positrons, runs the whole show. Powell groped in his shirt pocket for a loose cigarette.
"Dave," he said, "you're a good fellow. There's nothing flighty or prima donna-ish about you. You're a stable, rock-bottom mining robot, except that you're equipped to handle 6 subsidiaries in direct coordination. As far as I know, that has not introduced any unstable paths in your brain path map."
The robot nodded.
"That makes me feel swell. But what are you getting at, boss?"
He was equipped with an excellent diaphragm, and the presence of overtones in the sound unit robbed him of much of that metallic flatness that marks the usual robot voice.
"I'm going to tell you. With all that in your favor, what's going wrong with your job? For instance, today's B shift."
Dave hesitated.
"As far as I know, nothing."
"You didn't produce any ore."
"I know."
"Well, then?"
Dave was having trouble.
"I can't explain that, boss. It's been giving me a case of nerves, or it would, if I let it. My subsidiaries worked smoothly. I know I did." He considered, his photoelectric eyes glowing intensely. Then, "I don't remember. The day ended, and there was Mike, and there were the ore cars, mostly empty."
Donovan broke in.
"You didn't report at shift end those days, Dave. You know that?"
"I know. But as to why?"
He shook his head slowly and ponderously. Powell had the queasy feeling that if the robot's face were capable of expression, it would be one of pain and mortification. A robot, by its very nature, cannot bear to fail its function. Donovan dragged his chair up to Powell's desk and leaned over.
"Amnesia, do you think?"
"Can't say. But there's no use in trying to pin disease names on this. Human disorders apply to robots only as romantic analogies. They're no help to robotic engineering." He scratched his neck. "I hate to put him through the elementary brain reaction tests. It won't help his self-respect any." He looked at Dave thoughtfully and then at the field test outline given in the handbook. He said, "See here, Dave. What about sitting through a test? It would be the wise thing to do." The robot rose.
"If you say so, boss."
There was pain in his voice. It started simply enough. Robot DV-5 multiplied 5 place figures to the heartless ticking of a stopwatch. He recited the prime numbers between 1,000 and 10,000. He extracted cube roots and integrated functions of varying complexity. He went through mechanical reactions in order of increasing difficulty, and finally worked his precise mechanical mind over the highest function of the robot world, the solutions of problems in judgment and ethics. At the end of 2 hours, Powell was copiously besweated. Donovan had enjoyed a none-too-nutritious diet of fingernail, and the robot said,
"How does it look, boss?"
Powell said, "I've got to think it over, Dave. Snap judgments won't help much. Suppose you go back to the C-shift. Take it easy. Don't press too hard for quota just for a while, and we'll fix things up." The robot left.
Donovan looked at Powell.
Well?
Powell seemed determined to push up his mustache by the roots. He said there is nothing wrong with the currents of his positronic brain.
I'd hate to be that certain.
Oh, Jupiter, Mike, the brain is the surest part of a robot. It's quintuple checked back on Earth. If they pass the field test perfectly, the way Dave did, there just isn't a chance of brain misfunction. That test covered every key path in the brain.
So where are we?
Don't rush me. Let me work this out. There's still the possibility of a mechanical breakdown in the body. That leaves about 1,500 condensers, 20,000 individual electric circuits, 500 vacuum cells, 1,000 relays, and umpty-ump thousand other individual pieces of complexity that can be wrong. And these mysterious positronic fields no one knows anything about.
Listen, Greg. Donovan grew desperately urgent. I've got an idea.
That robot may be lying. He never...
Robots can't knowingly lie, you fool.
Now, if we had the McCormick-Wesley tester, we could check each individual item in his body within 24 to 48 hours. But the only two MW testers existing are on Earth, and they weigh 10 tons, are on concrete foundations, and can't be moved. Isn't that peachy?
Donovan pounded the desk.
But, Greg, he only goes wrong when we're not around.
There's something sinister about that.
He punctuated the sentence with slams of fist against desk.
You, said Powell slowly, make me sick. You've been reading adventure novels.
What I want to know, shouted Donovan, is what we're going to do about it.
I'll tell you. I'm going to install a visiplate right over my desk. Right on the wall over there, see?
He jabbed a vicious finger at the spot.
Then I'm going to focus it at whatever part of the mine is being worked, and I'm going to watch. That's all.
That's all? Greg!
Powell rose from his chair and leaned his bald fists on the desk.
Mike, I'm having a hard time.
His voice was weary.
For a week, you've been plaguing me about Dave. You say he's gone wrong. Do you know how he's gone wrong? No. Do you know what shape this wrongness takes? No. Do you know what brings it on? No. Do you know what snaps him out? No. Do you know anything about it? No. Do I know anything about it? No. So what do you want me to do?
Donovan's arms swept outward in a vague, grandiose gesture.
You got me.
So I tell you again. Before we do anything toward a cure, we've got to find out what the disease is in the first place. The first step in cooking rabbit stew is catching the rabbit. Well, we've got to catch that rabbit. Now get out of here.
Donovan stared at the preliminary outline of his field report with weary eyes. For one thing, he was tired, and for another, what was there to report while things were unsettled? He felt resentful. He said, Greg, we're almost 1,000 tons behind schedule.
You, replied Powell, never looking up, are telling me something I don't know.
What I want to know, said Donovan in sudden savagery, is why we're always tangled up with new type robots. I've finally decided that the robots that were good enough for my great uncle on my mother's side are good enough for me. I'm for what's tried and true. The test of time is what counts. Good, solid, old-fashioned robots that never go wrong.
Powell threw a book with perfect aim, and Donovan went tumbling off his seat.
Your job, said Powell, evenly, for the last 5 years has been to test new robots under actual working conditions for United States robots. Because you and I have been so injudicious as to display proficiency at the task, we've been rewarded with the dirtiest jobs. That, he jabbed holes in the air with his finger in Donovan's direction, is your work. You've been griping about it from personal memory since about 5 minutes after United States robots signed you up. Why don't you resign?
Well, I'll tell you,
Donovan rolled onto his stomach and took a firm grip on his wild red hair to hold his head up. There's a certain principle involved. After all, as a troubleshooter, I've played a part in the development of new robots. There's the principle of aiding scientific advance, but don't get me wrong. It's not the principle that keeps me going. It's the money they pay us.
Greg!
Powell jumped at Donovan's wild shout, and his eyes followed the redheads to the visiplate when they goggled in fixed horror. He whispered, "Holy howling Jupiter." Donovan scrambled breathlessly to his feet.
"Look at them, Greg. They've gone nuts."
Powell said, "Get a pair of suits. We're going out there." He watched the posturings of the robots on the visiplate. They were bronzy gleams of smooth motion against the shadowy crags of the airless asteroid. There was a marching formation now, and in their own dim body light, the rough-hewn walls of the mine tunnel swam past noiselessly, checkered with misty, erratic blobs of shadow. They marched in unison, seven of them, with Dave at the head. They wheeled and turned in macabre simultaneity, and melted through changes of formation with the weird ease of chorus dancers in Lunar Bowl. Donovan was back with the suits.
"They've gone jingo on us, Greg. That's a military march."
"For all you know," was the cold response, "it may be a series of calisthenic exercises. Or Dave may be under the hallucination of being a dancing master. Just you think first and don't bother to speak afterward either." Donovan scowled and slipped a detonator into the empty side holster with an ostentatious shove. He said, "Anyway, there you are. So we work with new model robots. It's our job, granted, but answer me one question. Why? Why does something invariably go wrong with them?"
"Because," said Powell, somberly, "we are accursed. Let's go."
Far ahead through the thick, velvety blackness of the corridors that reached past the illuminated circles of their flashlights, robot light twinkled.
"There they are," breathed Donovan.
Powell whispered tensely, "I've been trying to get him by radio, but he doesn't answer. The radio circuit is probably out."
"Then I'm glad the designers haven't worked out robots who can work in total darkness yet. I'd hate to have to find seven mad robots in a black pit without radio communication if they weren't lit up like blasted radioactive Christmas trees.
Crawl up on the ledge above, Mike. They're coming this way, and I want to watch them at close range. Can you make it?" Donovan made the jump with a grunt. Gravity was considerably below Earth normal, but with a heavy suit, the advantage was not too great, and the ledge meant a near 10-foot jump. Powell followed. The column of robots was trailing Dave single file. In mechanical rhythm, they converted to double and returned to single in different order. It was repeated over and over again, and Dave never turned his head. Dave was within 20 feet when the play acting ceased. The subsidiary robots broke formation, waited a moment, then clattered off into the distance, very rapidly. Dave looked after them, then slowly sat down. He rested his head in one hand in a very human gesture. His voice sounded in Powell's earphones.
"Are you here, boss?"
Powell beckoned to Donovan and hopped off the ledge.
"Okay, Dave. What's been going on?"
The robot shook his head.
"I don't know. One moment I was handling a tough outcropping in Tunnel 17, and the next I was aware of humans close by, and I found myself half a mile down main stem."
"Where are the subsidiaries now?" asked Donovan.
"Back at work, of course. How much time has been lost?"
"Not much. Forget it." Then, to Donovan, Powell added, "Stay with him the rest of the shift. Then, come back. I've got a couple of ideas." It was 3 hours before Donovan returned. He looked tired. Powell said, "How did it go?" Donovan shrugged wearily.
"Nothing ever goes wrong when you watch them. Throw me a butt, will you?"
The redhead lit it with exaggerated care and blew a careful smoke ring. He said, "I've been working it out, Greg. You know, Dave has a queer background for a robot. There are 6 others under him in an extreme regimentation.
He's got life and death power over those subsidiary robots, and it must react on his mentality. Suppose he finds it necessary to emphasize this power as a concession to his ego. Get to the point. It's right here. Suppose we have militarism. Suppose he's fashioning himself an army. Suppose he's training them in military maneuvers. Suppose you go soak your head. Your nightmares must be in technicolor. You're postulating a major aberration of the positronic brain. If your analysis were correct, Dave would have to break down the first law of robotics, that a robot may not injure a human being or, through inaction, allow a human being to be injured. The type of militaristic attitude and domineering ego you propose must have, as the end point of its logical implications, domination of humans. All right. How do you know that isn't the fact of the matter? Because any robot with a brain like that would, one, never have left the factory, and two, be spotted immediately if it ever was. I tested Dave, you know. Powell shoved his chair back and put his feet on the desk. No. We're still in the position where we can't make our stew because we haven't the slightest notion as to what's wrong. For instance, if we could find out what that danse macabre we witnessed was all about, we would be on the way out. He paused. Now listen, Mike, how does this sound to you? Dave goes wrong only when neither of us is present. And when he is wrong, the arrival of either of us snaps him out of it. I once told you that was sinister. Don't interrupt. How is a robot different when humans are not present? The answer is obvious. There is a larger requirement of personal initiative. In that case, look for the body parts that are affected by the new requirements. Golly. Donovan sat up straight, then subsided. No. Not enough. It's too broad. It doesn't cut the possibilities much. Can't help that. In any case, there's no danger of not making quota. We'll take shifts watching those robots through the visor. Anytime anything goes wrong, we get to the scene of action immediately. That will put them right. But the robots will fail spec anyway, Greg. United States robots can't market DV models with a report like that. Obviously. We've got to locate the error in makeup and correct it. And we've got 10 days to do it in. Powell scratched his head. The trouble is... Well, you had better look at the blueprints yourself. The blueprints covered the floor like a carpet, and Donovan crawled over the face of them following Powell's erratic pencil. Powell said, "Here's where you come in, Mike. You're the body specialist, and I want you to check me. I've been trying to cut out all circuits not involved in the personal initiative hookup. Right here, for instance, is the trunk artery involving mechanical operations. I cut out all routine side routes as emergency divisions." He looked up. "What do you think?" Donovan had a very bad taste in his mouth. "The job's not that simple, Greg. Personal initiative isn't an electric circuit you can separate from arrest and study. When a robot is on his own, the intensity of the body activity increases immediately on almost all fronts. There isn't a circuit entirely unaffected. What must be done is to locate the particular condition, a very specific condition, that throws him off, and then start eliminating circuits." Powell got up and dusted himself. All right. Take away the blueprints and burn them. Donovan said, "You see, when activity intensifies, anything can happen, given one single faulty part. Insulation breaks down, a condenser spills over, a connection sparks, a coil overheats. And if you work blind with the whole robot to choose from, you'll never find the bad spot. If you take Dave apart and test every point of his body mechanism one by one, putting him together each time and trying him out, all right, I can see through a porthole too." They faced each other hopelessly, and then Powell said cautiously, "Suppose we interview one of the subsidiaries." Neither Powell nor Donovan had ever had previous occasion to talk to a finger. It could talk. It wasn't quite the perfect analogy to a human finger. In fact, it had a fairly developed brain, but that brain was tuned primarily to the reception of orders via positronic field, and its reaction to independent stimuli was rather fumbling. Nor was Powell certain as to its name. Its serial number was DV-52, but that was not very useful. He compromised. "Look, Powell," he said, "I'm going to ask you